Welcome to Extreme Genes on the Mormon Channel, brought to you by The Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. Hey, it's Fisher, and welcome to Extreme Genes, America's family history show on ExtremeGenes.com, the program where we shake your family tree and watch the nuts fall out. And this past week, of course, after airing our interview with Luke Conter, a lot of people have been flocking to catch the podcast and hear the interview themselves, and it's just been absolutely amazing. David Allen Lambert, the chief genealogist from the New England Historic Genealogical Society, is on the line with us right now. You've corresponded with Lou over the years, right, David?
I sure have. Luke Conter and a few of the other ones are really kind of the last crew members we have from the Arizona. I mean, there are well over 100 or more known veterans. I mean, we just saw the Pearl Harbor Day event that took place, and a good turnout was there. But, I mean, these guys are an average age of 92, 93
yeah.
or higher. In fact, I think the oldest one is 103.
103.
California.
Unbelievable.
And one of the things that I found is after the Pearl Harbor Survivors Association discontinued, there was really no place to kind of get news, and I've been corresponding with these guys for years. So on Facebook, I created a group called Pearl Harbor Survivors Stories and Memorials, which has gone pretty viral. But we have children of the Pearl Harbor veterans and grandchildren posting photos and links to videos and news stories. So it's a great place to continue remembering these guys.
I don't think Pearl Harbor will ever leave us and leave our country, which is
Absolutely.
A great thing. Hey, glad to have you along for the show today. David's going to stick around for an extra segment today, and I'm excited about that, David, talking about getting your kids involved and your grandkids involved in family history. And this is the perfect time of year to be talking about it because there's some great opportunities coming up in the next couple of weeks.
Absolutely.
And later in the show, we're going to talk to a lady in New Jersey whose fourth great grandmother had two viewings after she died, 4 years apart. We'll explain what that's all about coming up a little bit later on. But what do you have for us today, David?
First of all, I want to congratulate you on the Citizen Excellence Award that you received. Congratulations.
Thank you. Yeah. That was kind of a surprise, and out of the blue, they called and said the Sheriff's Department in Davis County, Utah, said, we're going to have an awards bank. Would you come? We want to present you with a Citizen Excellence Award for finding the next of kin of the murder victim, Teresa Greaves, back in the spring. And it was very humbling, David.
Well, you know, well deserved. I mean, you really did that detective work that no one else had picked up on. And, it's definitely justly deserved.
Well, I appreciate that. I got to tell you, what was humbling about it is you're at this banquet, and there are these people there and who are detectives and sheriff's deputies, and they bring them up for various awards, and they say, okay, this guy had the biggest meth bust in the history of the state, and this guy over here, he protected this person who was being shot at and went in the line of fire and got in a gunfight, and I'm thinking, oh, and they're giving an award to me? These people are just, I mean, true heroes. And so I thank Sheriff Todd Richardson very much for the kind award. It wasn't necessary, but certainly very much appreciated and very humbling, again, to be with so many heroes who protect us. Not only here,
very
but throughout the...
to be on a radio show with someone who is a hero. So thank you for doing what you did.
Oh, stop it. What do you have for us today, David?
Well, I'll tell you, the blockbuster movie In the Heart of the Sea came out. Ron Howard directed, based on the book by Nathaniel Philbrick. I don't know if you remember back in September we chatted about the genealogy. Well, the fun part of this is, a lot of friends have been talking about this, is because I did the genealogy for him and connected him to Herman Melville and also to Owen Coffin, one of the sailors on the whaleboat Essex. Now, the fun thing about that is they're all cousins, including cousins with your spouse.
Yeah, with my wife, Julie, and you.
And, that, and me.
All yes, through and Tristram myself. Coffin.
Correct. The one and only governor of Nantucket. And the funny thing that Nat had mentioned is that he's been on Nantucket and he didn't know a Coffin connection. So now he always felt as an off-islander making a residence there. And now he's a first family of Nantucket, technically.
How cool is that?
It's great. Nat Philbrick, cheers to you, and congratulations on a wonderful job well done in the Heart of the Sea, and it was an honor to give you your connection to Herman Melville and Moby Dick, and of course, to the boat.
So yes. Excellent. What else you got for us?
Well, one of the exciting things, obviously, for me, I love history museums, and the Museum of the American Revolution is being built in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. I listened to a C-SPAN event with Scott Stevenson, who is the director of collections there, talking about this exciting museum dedicated to famous part of American history in the 18th century. So if you have an ancestor in the Revolutionary War, as I know you and I both do,
yep,
something you might want to check out when you're in Philadelphia the next time.
Wow, that sounds great.
2017.
Okay, exactly. We'll look for that.
Okay, well, moving on. You know, Ancestry is discontinuing Family Tree Maker after all these years.
Really?
Yeah.
Ooh, a lot of people to carry that. I wonder what they're going to do.
Well, I mean, luckily everything can be saved to a GEDCOM, so you can carry
sure
it over to the other software products that are out there. But it seems to be a trend now where people are putting online trees. I mean, personal ancestral file from the Church, Jesus Christ and Latter-day Saints, that's been discontinued. Master Genealogist, a very popular software product by Holy Genes, that's been discontinued. So we're seeing this trend, and a lot of people are grumbling about privacy. I mean, maybe you don't want your tree online. Maybe you're writing a book or something like that. How do you save it? So this is going to be a growing concern, and any of the people that are still in the market to sell software, one of the major contenders, Family Tree Maker, is now out of the loop. So it'll be interesting to see how this develops in the coming months and years.
Oh, that'll be great for Ancestral Quest and Roots Magic.
Exactly. All of which are very good, solid product, and I've used all of them.
Yep.
Like I say, with a GEDCOM, you can kind of carry your family luggage to any door when it comes to software programs. The only thing that doesn't cross over occasionally are your notes and your photos.
But, right.
But the bulk of it, you can get it quite nicely. Bringing that into electronic terms, we have the exciting news of our free guest user database of the week, and that includes Welsh death and burials from 1586 to 1885. Again, American Ancestry. .org offer the free guest database to people who register as a guest every week, and you can check that out.
All right, David, we've kind of run the course here right now, but you're going to stick around, right?
I sure am.
All right, we're going to talk about getting your kids and your grandkids involved in genealogy. This is the perfect time of year to do it. We'll talk to David about this coming up on Extreme Genes, America's Family History Show. ExtremeGenes.com. It is Fisher here, the Radio Root Sleuth, with my good friend David Allen Lambert, the Chief Genealogist for the New England Historic Genealogical Society and AmericanAncestors.org. And David, I was thinking about this, that between us,
we have 74 years of genealogical experience between us.
Oh, isn't it amazing? And think all of the things we haven't learned yet.
Yeah, right. There's always something new to learn. Now, you started genealogy as a child, and I started in my mid-20s. But as a child, what was it about genealogy and family history that hooked you right away?
Funny that you use the word hook. My grandmother had a genealogy book about her dad's family that my uncle had borrowed. And one day when I was home from school, I'm sitting home, and he came in, took his jacket off, and handed me this ancient-looking book. And then, of course, curious, seven-year-old, I'm looking at it. And inside was a tintype photograph. Now, right away, the curiosity is, this is a metal photograph? What's this? Never seen one of those before.
Of course.
So my grandmother came over and says, oh, that's nice. You see that picture. That's my dad. Well, at seven, I didn't know my 80-year-old grandmother was even a child at any point.
At any time, yes.
Exactly. Being so innocent at that point in time of my life, I didn't know about death. So, I mean, I'm like, well, where does he live?
Yeah.
And she says, oh, he died in 1921. And, you know, I explained how many years ago it was to me. And she opened the book and said, but this is my sister and my mom and my dad, and this is our genealogy, and explained that this is a story of her family. And then right away, because I could read, I said, Nana, I don't see your name in it. And she goes, well, I wasn't born yet. Well, that would have just stopped there. But then she said, by the way, David, my dad was on a whaling ship for a couple of years. Now, and of course, with the Nat Philbrick research I just did, this is really what hooked me, because now I saw a connection, because in school we had learned an innocent G-rated version of Moby Dick and about whaling and all that. So that was an exciting little time frame in my life, and now all of a sudden I had a personal connection.
Right.
So I said to my grandmother, I said, Nana, we should go forward and write some more down and write a book that includes you. And I just started asking questions then. And I'm still asking questions.
Yes, a lot of them to ask.
The sad thing, basically, is that, you know, by the time that I was 11, all my grandparents were gone. And by the time I was 30, both my parents were gone. So, you know, I'm the older generation now, even in my 40s. And it's like my cousins, who are 30 years older than me in some cases, were being turned to as the elders of the family. And it's funny, because if I had waited to do this when I retired, they're all gone. With genealogy, I find that this is the case. You either have a lot of free time when you retire,
yep,
or for me, I was a kid. you know, I was out there climbing the tree in my backyard, not so much, but I was tracing the one in my living room, and I got a lot of enjoyment out of it. And for me, and this is one of the things I tell parents when they come in with their kids, just last week, an event where we had parents and grandparents bringing their kids and grandkids in so they could come in and try genealogy. We had all sorts of projects and little things for kids to be very interested in genealogy, and it gives them a greater sense of social studies and American history, and for that matter, world history. Because, see, Fish, what I got out of genealogy is I saw now, from my great-grandfather being in whaling and, you know, connecting to Moby Dick and all of that, was that I saw how I fit in American and world history.
That's exactly it. I hated history when I was in school. I couldn't stand it. I found it to be boring. It didn't make sense. What do I care what somebody did 150 years ago? And then all of a sudden, when I started doing this research in my 20s, history became alive, and it has changed my life. And so I'm always telling people the same thing. You have to get your kids involved in interviewing folks before they're gone. And part of the issue is, I think most of us do have family, extended family, older members, through our first 20, 25 years. And there's always that sense as a kid or as a young adult that, oh, well, they're always going to be there because you haven't really lost anybody yet.
Correct.
And then all of a sudden you start losing them, as I did. I lost my dad at 17. All my grandparents were gone before I was 21. And suddenly it's like, well, who were these people? What did they do? I needed stories. And so I reached out to older cousins and aunts and uncles. And that's where that started to all come together. And I know them all now, all my dead ones, better now than I did when they were alive.
I think I know more about my grandparents than my parents knew about their own parents.
Yeah.
and that's kind of a story for another day. But there's some really interesting things that you dig up. And, you know, sometimes things are better left buried. But as a genealogist, I think that we like the skeletons in the closet. I mean, what is whispered at the dining room table that the kids aren't supposed to hear becomes genealogical goodies decades
yes,
later.
Yes, that's right.
I mean, and now with DNA, you know, I mean, oh, Uncle Joe really isn't Uncle Joe. It's Uncle Charlie who lives across the street. And you've got enough of those stories
exactly.
You know, to fill a file cabinet with.
Well, let's go through some tips now as to how we can get kids more involved, for parents to help their children become more involved in family history while they're young, because it's a gift that just keeps on giving.
It really is. I mean, it's a never-ending story. I mean, if you have an immigrant ancestor and you can't get records further back, concentrate on telling them the stories, getting the oral traditions down, and writing them down, sharing photograph sessions where you sit down and have the photographs labeled. How many boxes of unknown ancestors every family has? Just like you said, we'll never expect they're going to be gone. Well, of course I know who that is. Then the person who knows who it is gone. So telling children who are in photographs at a very young age is important. My daughter, who's now 12, can point any photograph that's in my living room of grandparents and great-grandparents and knows them by name, because I started when she was 4 and 5, when she asked who they were.
You know, I've done that with my grandchildren, and not one of them is 5 years old yet. And they love every time they come to visit the house to see these old pictures. They want to know who the father of the father of the mother of the father was. It's kind of a ritual that we go through as they come and visit.
Exactly. For a kid, it's a curiosity because you're connected to someone who's not physically there.
That's right.
And I think understanding where they're in school and they're learning about American Revolution or the Civil War or World War II, maybe when they're doing their social studies or their homework, say to them, by the way, your connection to this is your grandfather was in World War II at Pearl Harbor. And how many of these stories that, if you know them, pass them on. One of the things that always is interesting, that kids will start with genealogy and they'll use forms, just like all of us, to fill in their family tree, but there's no spot in there for the stories, and it's so important to tell them. And that's where the base root of genealogy is, family history, is the story.
Right.
My grandmother telling me that her father was on a whaling vessel. That didn't come with a document. I had to know the story, and then years later, I did the research, found out the name of the boat. In fact, a few years ago, somebody found in an attic the logbook for the vessel for the 2.5 years that he was on it. I have a copy of it now.
Fantastic.
Having a diary.
And, you know, the family tree itself is just a guide to the stories, as far as I see it. You know, you can point to a name and there's the name and the date, and that's interesting to know, oh, wow, they lived a long time ago. But when that name means something, oh, yeah, that was the fireman in New York City. Oh, this guy was the one who helped build the engine for Fulton's steamboat.
Exactly. I think of one of those type of charts as an index.
That's right.
The index needs to be compounded with stories and facts and photographs, or if you can't do photographs, do documents, gravestones. For me, Memorial Day was meeting my ancestors. We went out to the cemeteries and put flowers on grandparents' and great-grandparents' graves. And every time I travel, I like to go to the grave sites for great-great-granduncles that are buried up in the hinterlands of New Hampshire that I've never visited, just so I can pay my respects and get a photograph of the grave and get some information from it.
All right, David, what kind of recommendation would you make to parents about how they can get kids involved in interviewing their senior family members?
One of the things, it could be as basic as a tape recorder or a video camera or apps for your phone that will allow you to record the sound and video. Teach them to be the interviewer. You can go on the internet and get a list of questions. One basic question to ask a grandparent, how did you meet?
Yes.
It's not on the marriage record. And it's one of the key elements that always leads people to be curious. How did someone from Indiana and Oklahoma ever meet to get married? Well, you know, that's where your stories come in. And they lead to other ones. Let them talk. I mean, when I say a grandparent gets rambling on something, just let them go. Don't interrupt them because you may miss out on a precious gem of a story. Ask them about employment. That's one of the things we can't find. Employment. Where did they work? What was their first job? How about for kids, ask them what it was like to go to school. You'll probably hear that story that it walked 10 miles in 40 foot of snow backwards with no shoes. I mean, those are the stories you get. For my dad telling me that, every year the snow got deeper, he wore less clothing, and the distance got longer. I said, well, you moving all the time, Dad? And
you know, I heard that from my dad, too, and I finally got to visit his hometown in New Jersey and found that the school was just around the corner from his house.
The thing I find that if you get kids embracing the stories, they're going to be the herald of that story years down the road.
That's right.
That pile of photographs that you sat down with the kids at the holidays and put names on the photographs, identified them, that's going to be an amazing treasure to them when we're gone. And you watch the excitement at the family events that you're going to have when you tell them a story. They were on a whaling ship. They were a firefighter in New York. That's really where you breathe life into it, and you've got to be able to pass it on to the next generation, and they won't be forgotten.
Great stuff, David. Happy holidays to you. Talk to you again next week.
Talk to you soon, my friend.
And speaking of stories, wait till you hear the story coming up next from Sue Wynn from New Jersey. She's got a tale about her fourth great grandparents you will not believe. On Extreme Genes, America's Family History Show. It is Fisher here, the Radio Root Sleuth, talking to another one of our listeners, this one in Clementon, New Jersey. Sue Wynn is on the line. Hi, Sue. Welcome to the show.
Hey, Fish. Great to talk to you.
I am so excited to hear your story here and having got a little peek at what you're going to talk about. It is amazing the stories that can come from our past, and you've got one. How did you get started in your research, by the way?
Well, about 20 years ago, my father had passed away previously, and my father's cousin was still alive, and he started telling me some of these family history names. Although he didn't know a lot of the older stories, but he knew some names, and was about 15 years ago, because I'm a Jersey girl, been here most of my life, I said to my husband, why don't we go try to see if we can find some of these gravestones down in Mullica Hill? So we went on a mission down there, and we were looking through a couple of graveyards, and I'll be darned if we didn't come up with some of these gravestones. And one of them, well, two of them, Hannah Agging, who's my fourth great-grandmother, and her husband, Enoch, who's my fourth great-grandfather, were buried in St. Stephen's Episcopal Church Cemetery in Mullica Hill. So I ended up contacting the pastor of that church because I couldn't really read the gravestone very
right.
well.
Right, and maybe there's burial records that he could help you with.
Exactly, and so I talked to him on the phone, and he said, interesting story about your fourth great-grandmother. So it turns out that my poor fourth great-grandmother, Hannah, died when she was about 55 years old, and she was buried in the graveyard of the then St. Stephen's Episcopal Church. which was a little bit further down the road from where the church is located now. Well, they decided after she had passed away that they were going to sell that church property. Well, they decided to also, at the time, dig up all of the remains of those who were in that little cemetery and move them along to the new church property. Make it easier to sell the old church property, I would imagine.
Yeah, right.
I mean, I don't think anybody wants to build their house on a graveyard.
So, makes it tough when you're digging for the swimming pool, you know?
Yeah, right. So apparently there's this, I don't know if it's an element or exactly what it is, but it's called marl, and it's something that's found in the soil there in Mullica Hill area.
Okay.
And they've also found quite a few fossils in that area. As you can imagine, after about 4 years of being in the ground, the coffin had disintegrated quite a bit, as well as the others. But what they didn't expect to find was that her body was so beautifully preserved after 4 years in the ground. And this was quite the news, spread throughout the area, and there was so much interest in it that they actually held a viewing after 4 years of kind of being in the ground.
4 years in the ground and a second viewing.
And not only that, my fourth great grandfather had remarried. So can you imagine?
Well, that's a little awkward.
A little awkward. So apparently her hair was still pretty and curly, and her face was marbleized and very interesting. So they held a viewing and they reinterred her. And she to this day is in the ground in Mullica Hill at St. Stephen's Episcopal Church. However, in Mullica Hill, being the old town that it is, and in the spirit of Halloween, every year in October, they have something called the Ghost Walk.
Oh, no.
So it's about an hour and a half program. You walk through the town. Well, it turns out that my fourth great-grandmother, Hannah, is one of the ghosts represented at the Ghost Walk.
Oh, wow.
She stands out there in the cemetery, and someday my aspiration is to be Hannah in the Ghost Walk.
To play Hannah.
My fourth great grandmother.
What a great idea. So,
yeah, you know, I often wonder how she feels about that, being represented as a ghost, but it is what it is. I mean, hopefully she takes it in the good fun that it's meant to be.
I think that is exactly right. So where was this record, by the way? I mean, you obviously have a lot of details about this, including the husband and his remarriage and the whole story about how the body was preserved. What record did you find that in so others might be able to do the same kind of thing?
Well, this particular story was found in the parish register of St. Stephen's Church. So they have kept pretty good records and pretty detailed. And, you know, so often we go searching for our ancestors and there's nothing but names and dates because they haven't written anything about themselves. Nobody's written anything about them. And this particular church did a really great job of keeping records because I know about my fourth great grandfather as well, Enoch.
Really?
Husband. Yeah. It says that he was a small, wiry, athletic man who farmed a small place of 20 acres and for many years kept one of the village stores. He was a most estimable man and respected by all who knew him, was a man of sterling worth in every way, of a gentle, kindly disposition, and left a memory that is lovingly cherished by all who knew him. And he was the vestryman and warden of that church and one of the originators of the parish. So they wrote about him as well. So this is all in church records.
Well, that's an exceptional church record, though, nonetheless. I mean, I don't want to give the impression to people that you're going to find records like this everywhere you go. In fact, if you find out who the historian was who recorded those things, you ought to put a flower on his grave because he did a great job.
Yeah, I agree. And, you know, I feel this connection to Hannah and Enoch because of those little excerpts of things from their lives, and I know about them now.
Right,
it's a
right.
Beautiful thing.
Do you know anything about Hannah's life? I mean, you know about her death and what happened afterwards, but have you actually learned anything about her life?
Well, that is the sad thing. I really don't know a lot of details about her life, and I'm curious and would love to know. I mean, I know a little bit about her husband. I know where they lived. Right across the street from the church, there's a house, and it has a plaque on it. It says the Enoch Agings home. But no, I mean, the only thing that I really know about them is that they had a couple of children that passed away when they were very young because they are buried with Hannah. One was about 18 months old, the other about 2 years old. And they obviously had my third great-grandfather,
right.
Charles, whom I descend from.
Don't you think that a lot of the women in the households from back in those times were actually defined by the family, obviously?
Yes, I'm sure they were. I'm sure they were. So knowing what I know about Enoch, I'm assuming that she also was a lovely woman.
Yeah, similar nature. Exactly. All right, so where are you going from now with all this?
Gosh, I'm hoping to go further back. Now, there is a gentleman by the name of Hugh Agging who lived right next door to Enoch, and I'm guessing Hannah as well, and he has a Revolutionary War pension. So my next goal is to try to link those two for sure as father and son. And who knows, maybe my daughters and I can join the DAR.
So what records have you checked to try to link Hugh to Enoch?
Well, one of the things that I looked at the Gloucester County Historical Society was land records. And from that, I knew that Hugh and Enoch had lived next door to one another. But other than that, I just have not been able to find anything.
There's got to be a will for him someplace.
No, I have not gotten that far yet.
You might also want to look into letters of administration. Also, go to Fold 3, look into his military records. Often the military records will contain a family Bible record or a family Bible page that could list all the names of the people in the family and pretty much give you the relationship as well.
Yeah, that's a great idea because he was a Revolutionary War pensioner, so would love to make that connection.
Well, and to have the pension, you might also see some name patterns come up, unusual names. Perhaps his father was Enoch as well. That would give you a good, strong hint. And certainly being right next door, I think you're right. You know what you've got to do, and you know that what the relationship likely is.
Yeah, that's a great tip.
Fish. All right.
Definitely follow through with that.
Well, great talking to you. Sue Wynn from Clementon, New Jersey. And what a story about your fourth great grandmother, Hannah. Good luck. I do hope you get into the Halloween thing, getting the opportunity to portray her.
I think it would be a blast.
I think it'd be a lot of fun, too. And coming up next, Tom Perry, our preservation authority on Extreme Jeans, extremejeans.com. And we do this every week where we go through some of your questions. And we also mine the great mind of Tom Perry, our preservation authority. Hi, Tom. How are you?
Is that a different Tom Perry that you're speaking of?
Well, this is a great email we got from Dusty. Dusty says, I have a VHS tape that has a family interview that was done in the late 1990s with a family member that is no longer with us. I transferred it to DVD, but the audio is so bad, I have to turn the volume on the TV all the way up in order to hear what's being said. I still have the VHS. Are you able to transfer the VHS to DVD and fix the audio? Good question, Dusty. What do you say, Tom?
We have that come up quite often. There's a couple of different things. Is the audio bad because it's low? Is the audio bad because there's noises in the background? What exactly is the problem? So the first thing you need to do is send it to us, and we'll load it into our computer, and we'll listen to the audio. And if it's a volume thing, that's not that big of a fix. So it's not going to be that expensive. If it's something really bad, like there's pigs oinking in the background or refrigerators humming, then what we have to do is we have to write what we call an algorithm, which basically finds those tones and pulls them out. And then if it's consistent through the entire tape, we just set up the algorithm, run the audio through it, and then it's pretty much gone.
Now, those algorithms, I take it, do not hit the same frequency as the human voice, right?
Exactly. That's where you have to be so careful. If you just look at the part that's bad and do an algorithm to remove that, and where it crosses the human voice, you're going to have a lot of problems. A lot of sounds are either below or above the normal human voice, or even people are talking. Because if you're talking about somebody that's their interview is almost kind of monotone, then it's really easy because they have such a small range in their voice. So there's a lot of technology that's into this. If you're a DIY person, you can get Adobe Audition and you can kind of do it yourself because it takes these different wavelengths and they're different colors.
Oh.
And so you can sit and listen to it and kind of while you're watching in Adobe Audition say, oh, his voice is a blue part. So you don't want to mess with the blue part. So then you basically, with a stylus pencil, go and remove the yellow and the green and the orange and maybe some of the light blue and some of the really dark blue. And then when you remove that, it's going to bring the volume down, but yet his voice is still pretty much preserved in the way that you know Uncle Ted talks or whatever. So then you can take that part and actually amplify it. And then some of the little parts of the refrigerator noise or whatever that crosses his voice are going to kind of get drowned out by bringing his voice back up. And so when you do this, it sounds so much better. And a lot of times these new TVs have the bass and the treble. They have all kinds of different adjustments you can make. But if this is something you want to do for your family, it's pretty much too late for Christmas now. However, if you want to do things for them in the future, you can take these things and clean them up and make DVDs. because you don't want to send it off to somebody in your family and say, oh, by the way, make sure you turn your volume off, do this, because then they're not going to listen to it. There's a lot of things you can do. And like the cost, as he mentioned, it depends on the length of the tape. If it's a long one, it's usually about $25. And to actually do the transfer and then the audio, we're guessing it's a simple thing, like a volume thing. So it's probably going to take about 15 minutes to do it. So about $25. So $50 for the whole transfer.
And that's typical of places throughout the country?
Yeah, just about any place you go. That's about what they're going to charge a walk-in place. Most people are pretty flexible with what they're doing and pretty compatible with prices. If you ever run into somebody, and I have people complain about this all the time, you see people on the internet that's doing something that's like half price of everybody else. The person knows what his work is worth. So be really, really careful. Read the reviews on the internet and see what people have said, if they're happy with them, if they're not happy with them. That'll help a lot. Unless you're on such a tight budget, it's like, hey, I have to do it at this cheap rate or I don't get it done. It's better to do it at a cheap rate than not do it. However, always remember, keep your tapes, keep your video, keep your film, keep everything. Don't throw it away.
Fisher here, the Radio Root Sleuth. It's our final segment with Tom Perry, our Preservation Authority. What do you got?
Talked about 3D printing before.
Yes.
And the biggest people have with 3D printing is it's really, really slow. And we've talked about family heirlooms, so you can take them and make 3D copies of it so everybody has a pseudo copy of what it was.
Right.
But they're slow, they're cumbersome, etc. Well, there's a new one that they're working on right now that works out of a polymer type thing. So what happens is it has this liquid polymer that the 3D printer actually goes down inside the polymer. And as it pulls it out, there's kind of like a photo, a picture that is done with light and oxygen. The light and the oxygen mixing with this polymer causes it to harden and liquefy and harden and liquefy as it's coming out of the vat. It's almost like sci-fi. Like you see this human form come out of this liquid mess. This is exactly how this 3D printer works. It pulls up this polymer and it zaps it with this light from this photograph that's in the vat and says, okay, this goes here, this goes here, this goes here. So it's so much faster and it's a lot better. Once the form comes out, all you do is basically hose it off and it's ready to rock and roll. You don't have to get down and sand it. It is absolutely incredible.
How much faster?
Over 100 times faster.
Whoa.
They're going to be expensive. However, they're working with different businesses that this will be a part of their cash, so to speak. So we could have one of these in our place. People could bring in an old watch, any kind of an heirloom, and we could actually photograph it, put it in the vat, and they could pick it up next day.
That's insane.
So many times when somebody dies in your family and everybody wants this, well, with something like this, we can actually take it and make you another pocket watch, make you whatever. It won't be functional. However, it'd be a replica of the original one, and you could go in and paint it, do all kinds of cool things with it. It's just absolutely amazing. Because like I say, one of the biggest problems with the old kind, say you're making a round ball, it's not perfect. You're going to have to kind of sand it down because it takes out these strips, turns them into liquid, forms them really, really slow, doing one layer at a time. Where this one, as the thing's coming out of the vat, it's just shooting it with oxygen and with light. And if you want some more information, get the copy of Popular Mechanics. Super fun stuff.
All right. Interesting. Boy, where are we going? Great stuff. Thanks, Tom.
Thanks for having me.
That's what we call in the biz a wrap. Thanks once again to David Allen Lambert from the New England Historic Genealogical Society for doing an extra segment today. Also to New Jersey's Sue Wynn talking about her fourth great grandmother who had two viewings after she died 4 years apart. If you missed it, catch the podcast. Talk to you next week. And remember, as far as everyone knows, we're a nice, normal family. Share your family story by going to FamilySearch.org. This has been Extreme Genes on the Mormon Channel, brought to you by The Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints.